Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Andrew Shafkin Show on Blog Talk Radio on every weekday evening at either 6:30, 8 o'clock, 9:30, or 10 or 11. And on every weekend evening, the same. And I welcome all peoples and races and nations. I welcome all because Jesus, I know, welcomes them in his death on the cross. He welcomes all people and gives them his love unequivocally and immeasurably. Now, the thing I'm going to talk about today, I talked about previously the patriarchy and explained that many people, there are people who take the position that the biblical use of male analogous languages, God as Father, Jesus as Son, the Eucharist, where the priest is only a male. Many people interpret these doctrines or dogmas as prejudice, churches being anti-woman. And I did go over this in terms of what the patriarchy really means. And I did that yesterday, last night. And today I'm going to go into this again. The issue is going to be more exactly Jesus and women, because the Roman Catholic Church has been accused of being anti-woman in some of its doctrines, in some of its setups. And I'm going to try to explain this isn't so, and I'm going to try to explain what is going on that is misinterpreting, that is being misinterpreted and not understood correctly. Now, what I'm going to talk about today is Jesus and women. The Roman Catholic Church has been severely criticized as oppressing women. And as I said previously on my discussion of the patriarchy, the main thrust of these attacks has been focused on the Roman Catholic Church's insistence that women be barred from the priesthood and the Church's opposition to abortion. These are seen as anti-woman, anti-woman's rights. And it is seen that nobody should be barred from being a clergyman or a priest. And in addition, the Church's opposition to abortion, again, has been interpreted as an anti-woman position. I've explained in my previous book, entitled Essays in the Christian Worldview, the reason for the Church's position for not permitting women to be Roman Catholic Church is the fact that the Church is conducting or reenacting the sacrifice of Christ in the person of Christ. The priest is therefore in a substitutionary situation in representing the person of Christ and in reenacting the sacrifice of Christ. This is not a matter of the Church not being an equal opportunity employer or being treating everybody equally in a parliamentary sense. But the issue is what a sacrament is and what is occurring at the Eucharist. The sacrament is the priest is representing the person of Christ, a male. And in that sense, the priest is thought to be a male. And he is conducting a sacrifice of Christ in the person of Christ, and Jesus as a male, his sacrifice is being reenacted. So that's what's going on here. It's not that the Church is prejudiced against women, but that the entire Eucharist is involves the priest being representing the person of Christ, who is a male. He was a male in his life. And even in heaven, he has a male body. He has no sex at this point. But as I said, women may be not allowed to be in the priesthood because the priest is conducting in the person of Christ. He represents Christ, a male, and is reenacting the sacrifice of Christ, who also has been a male. So it's not a matter of the church as being and not being an equal opportunity employer. But the issue, as I explained here, is what this sacrament is and what is occurring at the sacrament. What is occurring is that the priest, who must be a male, unfortunately, is representing the person of Christ. Therefore, he cannot be a female because Christ is a male. In addition, the sacrifice of Christ is being reenacted. Again, Christ is a male. These are not sexual issues. These are issues of what's going on in this sacrament. And again, the church's opposition to abortion, which again is seen as a feminist issue and an attack on a woman's right to choose, is really based on the idea. It has nothing to do with being an anti-woman. The entire doctrine of opposition to abortion is not a feminist female issue, not an attack on a woman's right to choose, but is based on the idea that people have value. Their value is eternal. They can be infirm, old, handicapped, dying, or yet to be born. As I say, the idea behind the church's opposition to abortion is that all people have value, and that value doesn't vary. It is eternal. They can be infirm, old, handicapped, dying, to be born. The church's view is that human life has value for all in light of the sacrificial death of Christ for all mankind. So the church's position on abortion is that all life, even beginning life, nascent life, old people about to die, the handicapped, they all have value in light of the sacrificial death of Christ for all men and women. The church's position is that Jesus sacrificed his life for all men and women, and that includes the yet-to-be-born, the infirm, old, handicapped, and dying. Their eternal destiny is the same. The world measures people by their success, their intelligence, or their position in society. Church measures people in a lot of ways. It's usually that measurement is incorrect. The world measures people by their success, their intelligence, or their position in society. The church and Christ measure people by a different yardstick, not by what they have or have gotten, wherever they are in their lives, but the fact of their eternal destiny is the same. And at whatever stage of life they have, their eternal greatness is the same, whether nascent, potential, or terminal, or approaching death. Oh, so I think I've explained why the church opposes abortion. It's not that the church is against women, wants to make women have babies, and is opposed to their rights to not have a baby. But the church is concerned with the value of human life. That life can be yet to be born, can be infirm, old, handicapped, or dying. The value, the eternal value of all men and women is the same for the church. And the reason for it is the death of Christ on the cross for all men and women, beginning in life, ending in life. The world measures people quite differently from the church by their success, their intelligence, their position in society. But Christ and the church measure people by a different yardstick. Their yardstick is their value as persons, whatever stage of life they may be in. And that value does not change by their position in society or their success. Let me say this, so I think this requires further clarification. The church has raised the status of women significantly. A glance at the Bible, the Gospels, will reveal this. It's very important to understand that the Son of God, God, was born of a woman and had a human mother. This is very important to raise the status of women. The church raises the status of women immeasurably because God the Son of God, God himself, was born of a woman and had a human mother. In the fifth chapter of Matthew, Jesus states that to look at a woman with lust is commit adultery. Again, he is raising the status of women, saying that if you even look at a woman with lust, you are committing adultery. The status of women, once again, is being raised. In verse 31 of the fifth chapter of Matthew, the apostle goes on to state, Jesus goes on to state, that one who divorces his wife for any reason on grounds of chastity makes her an adulteress. Again, Jesus is raising the status of women by saying that by making a rule that to a person who divorces his wife, except on the grounds of chastity, is an adulteress. So here we have the situation where women are being raised up. They're being raised up because Jesus was born of a woman. Moreover, they're being raised up because Jesus says to look at a woman with lust is commit adultery. Again, that woman is being raised up and made greater and more important. And then he goes on to state that anyone who divorces his wife, except on the ground of chastity, makes her an adulteress. So again, he's raising the state of women. He's saying you can't just throw people away with a word, which was the culture then. He says that you only should be able to divorce your wife, except on the grounds of chastity. You can't divorce. Jesus bars divorce, and the reason is that he raises the state of women from being a chattel and a piece of property to be thrown away, which was the culture then. A man could divorce his wife by a word. Jesus says no. You cannot divorce your wife, and that raises the status of women once again immeasurably. Peter's mother-in-law was sick with a fever, and he cures her with a touch of her hand. A woman is being cured with a touch of the hand of the Son of God. In Matthew chapter 9, Jesus cures a woman suffering from an illness. Once again, he is curing women left and right. In Matthew chapter 27, a number of women are seen following Christ. Well, Christ had many women followers, including specifically Mary and Mary Magdalene. These two women were seen as followers of Christ in a society in which women had no status to follow anybody. And then in Matthew 28, verse 31, Mary Magdalene is seen as going to the sepulcher of Christ. Once again, female sex is being raised up. Mary and Mary Magdalene are followers of Christ, and women did not have that position in society in general of following people. But also Mary Magdalene, she's seen as going to the sepulcher of Christ. And Matthew 13, verse 53, reference is made to Jesus' mother, Mary. Matthew chapter 26 describes a woman who pours ointment on Jesus' head. Again, the role of women is quite significant in the Gospels. Mary Magdalene is seen going to the sepulcher of Christ. She's there on the button, as opposed to the men who are not there. This woman is there. Matthew 13, verse 53, reference is made to Jesus' mother, Mary. And in Matthew chapter 26, he describes a woman who pours ointment on Jesus' head. Again, a woman has a significant role of pouring ointment on Jesus' head. For Luke, again, a woman is described as anointing Jesus and kissing his feet. In Luke chapter 28, verse 40, again, Jesus cures a young woman. In Luke chapter 10, a woman, Martha, and her sister Mary are presented attending to Christ. Women have a leading role in the gospel in every way. I just gave you some examples. In the Gospel of Luke chapter 7, a woman is described as anointing Jesus and kissing his feet. Again, the role of women in that society is raised up by these incidents. Luke chapter 8, verse 40, again, Jesus cures a young woman. Once again, a woman is being helped. In Luke chapter 10, verses 38 to 42, a woman, Martha, and her sister Mary are presented as attending to Christ. Again, the role of women is raised up consistently in the Gospels. In John chapter 2, we have the event of Jesus changing water into wine at the marriage of Cana in Galilee. He is officiating over a marriage and changing water into wine. Again, the role of Jesus in terms of female women is raised. In John chapter 20, Mary Magdalene is presented as coming to the empty tomb. Again, a woman is present as opposed to the men at the empty tomb. At Jesus' crucifixion, Mary Magdalene, and Jesus' mother are present at the cross. Again, women have a leading position in Jesus' life. At Jesus' crucifixion in the Gospel of John, Mary Magdalene, and Jesus' mother are present at the cross. Mary, the mother of Jesus, is so important in the Roman Catholic Church that she's referred to as Queen of Heaven and can intercede with Christ in prayers directed to her. So I give you some examples of the constant presence of women in Jesus' life in the Gospels, and their leading presence. He is present when he changes water into wine. Mary Magdalene is presented as coming to the empty tomb. Again, the men are not there, the disciples are not there, but Mary Magdalene is. At Jesus' crucifixion, in John chapter 19, Mary Magdalene and Jesus' mother are present at the cross. Again, the disciples are not present, but these women are present, we are told. And this brief review, let me say this, ladies and gentlemen, this brief review of the gospel reveals that Jesus, far from degrading women or casting them into a lower social status, treated them as equal and raised them in their status. As I said, Jesus was the son of a human mother, and the son of God, and God had a human mother, which is very important to grasp the importance of women in the church. This review of this material reveals that Jesus, far from degrading women or casting them into a lower social status, treated them as equal and raised them in status. The Christian church has always raised the status of women, and the ultimate answer to those who state otherwise is to realize that God sent his only begotten Son from the mansions of heaven in eternity to be born of a woman, and throughout his earthly ministry was constantly in the presence of women. His followers were consistently women, and women were present at the crucifixion and came to the empty tomb at the time of his resurrection. He was born of a woman and was constantly in the presence of women. And these women were present at the crucifixion as opposed to the disciples and came to the empty tomb at the time of his resurrection, as opposed to the male disciples. There can be no doubt that Jesus raised the status of women, and I think that the Gospels show this to be so, and I hope you have grasped what I've said here and understand what I'm saying here and will adhere to what I say as a true interpretation of the life of Christ. He raised the status of women in a society where women were pushed down and kept as chattels of their husbands. He forbade divorce, so significant did he consider the female sex, that he said they shouldn't even be divorced, as they were by the word of their husband in that society. Hope you've enjoyed this talk, and I may review this again, but I once again wanted to tell you that these doctrines are very important to clarify the status of women, and the attack on the church as denigrating women is absurd, unfair, and a lie.